Are you an AI skeptic or an evangelist? Artificial intelligence is creeping into various aspects of our lives, offering unsolicited help. Should we opt out or not? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to explore these questions are Plunk Foundation Executive Director John Cavanaugh, Northern Kentucky University Biz Access Hub Director Dawn Parks, and Cincinnati AI Catalyst Executive Director Carl Frank. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, John, how ubiquitous has AI become? Have we gotten to a point where it's always kind of working in the background of our lives without our knowledge?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, most companies have integrated AI, whether you like it or not, in most of your products, in your phones, and your TV, and in most of the technology you're using, even if you don't think of it necessarily as technology.
Okay. And Dawn, you've written that we're in the flip phone era of AI. Have we not fully realized how it can help us quite yet?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I think people are expecting AI, the people who are using it, to operate like your iPhone 16. But we can't even imagine what the iPhone 16 version of AI is right now. People are innovating faster than we can adopt it, let alone know how to package items together to be the most effective and productive.
Yeah. Carl, we hear this term responsible AI. What does that mean? How can AI be responsible?
So responsible AI really is about designing with the intent of being ethical and recognizing that the human is the most important part of everything that it is that we're doing. And so to remove bias, to remove, the training of bad actors, things like that. So responsible AI is to do that with intention.
We're talking about artificial intelligence and whether we should be embracing the help it offers or opting out. What do you think? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Is that idea of responsible AI, is that making its way to kind of the top of this work, to the people who are developing this, do you think, Carl?
It depends. What I can really proudly tell you is in the Cincinnati region, this is really a high-level focus area. As a matter of fact, we are nationally known as a center of responsible AI research and application, particularly through the University of Cincinnati. What is necessary is for the consumer to demand responsible AI. We're seeing pockets where there are growing movements of responsible AI demands. Of course, what we see mostly is things like deepfakes, and there are a lot of incredibly important things that are happening around, for example, the ability to come into a Zoom call as an AI agent, those kinds of things. And as those kinds of things manifest themselves, you're going to see much more powerful institutions and individuals getting involved in that. But what's really critical for this to take hold is for individual citizens to demand it.
Dawn, you make the case that AI can help business owners save time by making suggestions for how to write emails, for example. But do those suggestions ever just annoy you?
Well, in order for it to, I don't know if you're talking about people in general, but you have to actually work within the tool for it to create the email. So the question becomes then, there are times when you do want to have it be a personal email, and sometimes there's a tricky or a clarifying opportunity when you have to send it. If I have to send something to my dean, it's going to sound very different than if I'm sending something to my sister. So having the ability to choose if I want to use the tool or not has been really valuable.
John, how easy is it to opt out of those suggestions? I mean, we heard an example just internally of an NPR journalist who had a Zoom, AI was recording a Zoom call without the knowledge, and all of a sudden there's a transcript, there's a recording, and nobody pressed a magic button to make that happen. I mean, how important is it to be able to opt out? It seems like sometimes Clippy is there when you don't, without even asking permission, you know?
Yeah, so the Silicon Valley ethos is move fast and break things. 40 years ago, we understood how to make AI explainable, where you could no longer deal with a black box. But that has been largely ignored until, like Carl said, the consumer demands more explainable and clarifying AI. So that is something that depends on the company, how easy that is, and depends on the updates of the app and the AI. And it gets vastly complex. But at the end of the day, we have to demand it as a nation.
How seriously, John, do you think we should take privacy concerns? I mean, privacy concerns come up when we find out Google's Gemini AI is reading third-party apps like WhatsApp or messages on Android devices when we didn't realize that was happening.
Yeah, I think we should take it very seriously. But the problem is it's really abstract, and there are concrete harms that exist. Our organization has a survivor advisory board. These are people who have been trafficked. Their kids have taken their lives. There have been various harms that exist, and they are making that known. So you can see how this traces to the accessibility of data and the lack of privacy that exists. Mm.
Don, how should business owners be thinking about privacy concerns when they're incorporating AI and these tools into their workflow?
Well, I think the first thing is to start to recognize what are the problems that they might want to solve using AI. So that helps design the tools and the strategies that they might use. And then to create policy. There's the policy called no one can use AI. And then at the other end, it's we have no controls over it. And I think that companies who want to be able to protect their own data, their own information, and their employees need to establish policies and make sure that the employees know and understand what those policies mean and what happens when there's an infraction, because it puts the whole could put the whole company at risk. But having some rules is always a good idea for companies.
Yeah, some guardrails there.
Absolutely.
Carl, you know, there are plenty of people who haven't gotten on board with AI, who feel skeptical. Do you think there's an argument that the more you learn about it, the more it could be helpful to your work, for example?
Absolutely. And to be honest, everybody is exposed to AI today. And if you're interacting with social media, if you're interacting with the internet, one way or the other, you're already interacting with AI. So it really comes down to a question of how much influence, how much control in my interaction do I want to have? AI is a tool. It can be an extremely beneficial tool, but it's not really anything different than any other tool that has power. You have to respect that power. You have to understand that power. And then you have to choose how, as an individual, you're going to influence that power.
Again, we're talking about artificial intelligence and whether we should be embracing the help it offers or opting out. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. John, you were talking about some of the very serious problems that your survivors have encountered, the things that their families have gone through. What's the advice that you give about establishing those guardrails and really using AI in a responsible, helpful way that doesn't put people at risk?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing is that you need brakes in AI. And that's how cars go fast, is because of brakes. And we have to look at the digital tools and skill set we have. So what does it look like to cross the street both ways digitally? That changes very fast. And in order for parents to understand that, they can't just spend all day Googling these things or ChatGPTing these things, right? They have to have some set of regulations and rules, and that's where policy comes into place, because we're putting too much emphasis on parenting right now, but the threat vectors continue to amplify because of this new technology, and bad actors are exploiting it so fast. I'm a boots-on-the-ground organization, and we're seeing this bubble up really quickly. If we wait until research comes out, it'll be several years. So we need to engage our politicians at the local and state levels to really help them understand these harms that are existing before it's too late.
So what does the Plunk Foundation do? How do you teach people to look both ways before you cross the street digitally? I mean, I love that analogy, but I have no idea how I would do that or teach my children how to do that.
Yeah, so we exhibit something called co-design, and that is when you work within each district or organization. For example, the Avondale community is very aware that privacy is important, and I don't have to explain why. But in Northern Kentucky, there's a lot of Guatemalan population, and it's their first time having 5G access with brand new phones, and they don't understand the importance of, you know, obfuscating their data. So that becomes an awareness seminar, whereas in Avondale, we talk more about education. How do you better protect your family with very simple settings? And the good news is that 99% of the problems can be avoided by like two or three things a lot of times.
What are those things?
Yeah, it depends on what you're using. But a lot of times, it's just making sure you have certain settings that you change. And this could be the ability for third-party apps to have access to something. And sometimes it's just multi-factor authentication, so other people can't break in and steal and use the information you have. So it really depends on the app, and that's why we come in and do hands-on teaching.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Kelly. Thanks so much for listening. What's your question or comment?
My question is, how are we going to be able to ensure that students are actually learning instead of using the AI programs to do their homework?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if this is up your alley, Dawn, but you're at a university, so I'm going to throw that to you.
Okay, thank you. It depends on your point of view when it comes to the use of technology. When the Encyclopedia Britannica books went off the shelf, and then we had to go to the library, and then you have the internet, and is what the internet say true or not? Who knows, right? So I think it's really important to educate the so that the faculty and students understand what the expectations are. And then I think it gives the faculty, and I am speaking from the college level, the opportunity to redesign how they teach the content. Because quite often you're busy just trying to make sure kids turn in their assignments. But we don't think about new ways of teaching content. And I love the idea of being able to use AI tools so that students can engage and interact in different ways that isn't just toward test taking, right? Teachers can then use all the knowledge and excitement and creativity that they have instead of, you know, being boxed into certain kinds of tests and measures. So I think there's an opportunity. But as schools, we all have to figure out for ourselves what's needed and how to manage and monitor it.
Carl, do you want to add to that? Is that something I know your organization is working on, kind of a blueprint for AI? Is education part of that?
Yes. Yeah. So the AI blueprint for the Cincinnati region has 12 key elements, and education is one of those 12. So related to this question, I think what's really important is to start with the end in mind. So what are the educational outcomes of the institution that that student is associated with? And if you start with those outcomes, and then to start to move backwards, as you're designing your ability to deliver on those outcomes, you're going to use a suite of tools to develop those. But also, if those outcomes, let's use critical thinking as a specific outcome, okay? There need to be specific expert-based designs to be able to identify what critical thinking is and practice critical thinking. And so I believe that if, as institutions evolve, that as long as they're really focused on working with the next step, whether that's matriculation or employment, and they really say these are the outcomes that are necessary and come backwards, then these problems are going to be solved.
Thanks for that question, Kelly. John, did you want to add something, John?
Yeah, just to add color to that, the way to think about this is when the calculator was first invented, there were actually protests about the calculator because students wouldn't learn basic math operators. What happened was the curriculum still taught addition, multiplication. You had to use that. And then you were empowered with a calculator in both the skill set you had, as well as using the calculator was able to help you more. Now, we need to rethink this framework because ChatGPT or, you know, AI in general seems to be like the calculator for word-based things. But we still need to teach the critical thinking, and we have to really hone in on how do we make a student's critical thinking improve using that.
Mm-hmm. Dawn, did you want to add something?
Just quickly that we have a lot of business owners that'll come to us and say, are you teaching kids AI? And we say, well, what is it that you want? And when we do talk to them, we find that they really want the critical thinking, they want the logical skills with AI to support it versus hey, do they know ChatGPT? So mm-hmm. I think it's really important in the, as we develop the new curricula, what is it that companies need and people need in those next generations?
Dawn, what's the best way to get started and spend some time with AI if we want to figure out, I'm thinking of work now, how it can be helpful and not a pain in the neck?
Well, I think that the first thing you do is find a tool and experiment. Think about different things that take a long time or you're doing over and over again that give you trouble. It could be even, you know, I need time to figure out a recipe at home so I can go back to work. Take a picture of everything that's in your refrigerator, put it into ChatGPT and say, I need three recipes from this stuff and see what comes out. So I would start experimenting with things that aren't going to have an impact on your job yet to make sure you start to be comfortable. You can ask it about health. You can ask it about movies, all kinds of things to get comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that you would caution to be careful about when you start that kind of experimenting, John?
Yeah. Don't put anything about who you are and yourself and people you know. Be really careful about those things, especially a lot of business owners are putting out company secrets. A lot of lawyers have gotten
company secrets.
Yeah, like if you're talking about like certain data points that you're putting in, profit margins, things like this. You don't want to share that with something that can be crunched and then reaccessed later.
That makes sense. What would you like to add to that, Carl, in terms of getting started and really making AI work better for you? Is that something you're looking at too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because our objective as a Cincinnati AI Catalyst is against all 2.3 million people in the 8-county Cincinnati region. And so we're looking at across all demographics of society. I think what's really important is for people to say what matters to me and really to experiment within the space of what it is that's interesting to you. Don talked about hobbyists, but in a professional setting, if I do consumer-related work, then engage the AI in the consumer side. So as I'm learning and interacting with it, because I'm aware of that domain, I can understand how to communicate with it, and then that allows me to spread.
When you say engaged on the consumer side, can you give an example of that for that?
Yeah, so let's say that I'm a brand manager at Procter & Gamble. I understand how to engage consumers, how to do consumer research, what the outcomes are, how competition works. So I can, because I understand that area, that domain, I can start to ask the LLM questions. And then I can ask the LLM deeper and deeper and deeper questions, and then even to the aspect of how can I be a better brand manager? And because I understand that already, I can understand the opportunities that come with all the knowledge of the world in my space.
I see. Build on your own knowledge. Well, I've been talking with Plunk Foundation Executive Director John Cavanaugh, Northern Kentucky University Biz Access Hub Director Dawn Parks, and Cincinnati AI Catalyst Executive Director Carl Frank. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.